Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Right then, guys, welcome to Let's Talk About. My name is Liam.
And my name's Billy. Every Sunday, we will be here to bring you episodes about all things weird, scary, and spooky.
We cover everything from ghosts, aliens, surviving a zombie apocalypse, true crime. We've even spoken about a talking mongoose. No topic is off limits.
Hey, don't you two be forgetting about us.
No, of course, there's no chance of forgetting about you two, is there? How's that experiment going?
Mind your own business.
Sorry, Igor. We've both actually been writing some scary stories of our own for Terrifying Tales. If you and your master want to read them.
We don't need your help, you stupid, worthless pair of...
Anyway, so this is Let's Talk About. You can listen every Sunday, 7 a.m. UK time.
And the last Sunday of every month, you'll hear from the delightful pair, Igor and his master, over at Terrifying Tales.
See you there.
Oh, hi! If you're looking for another spooky and funny podcast to add to your rotation, check out Anything Bones, now part of the Podmoth Network.
Hey, Boneheads, I'm Sophie Schwartz.
And I'm Caitlin Hart.
And we are the hosts of Anything Bones, the podcast where we talk about bones and bone-related topics.
Soph, what are bone-related topics?
Thank you for asking, Caitlin. This can be anything from mausoleums to murderers, famous skeletons to cadaver dogs.
Bone churches, mummies, serial killers. You'll hear about them all.
And sometimes we have guests stop by and tell us their favorite bony tales.
Check out Anything Bones on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever your little heart desires.
We release new episodes every Saturday.
Bone Voyage!
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again. How are you doing, Declan?
I am sweaty right now. It's very hot.
Is it hot?
Other than that, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm in the coldest part of our house, so, and it's not super hot here today.
So. Lucky.
Yeah. Well, before we get started, I wanted to shout out to some Patreon subscribers and say thank you for following us on Patreon. That is, those people are C. Blask, Andy Y., Mandy B., and Jin D. So thank you so much for... finding us on Patreon and subscribing to us, and anybody else who wants to do that, we will shout you out in a future episode as well.
So go check us out over there.
Definitely. We got some cool stuff over there. We do some pre-releases of our cocktails so that you can get all of the ingredients ahead of time, and then you'll have them when the episode comes out. And we also do ad-free episodes so that if you don't want to listen to the ads that we have, you don't have to, because we edit those out and you can listen to it ad-free. You just get to listen to our shining voices and laugh along with us and groan along with us at the grossness of some of our stories.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of stories, what story are you bringing for us today? Because you are brutal, right?
Yes, and I'm going to be talking about the Keddie murders.
Keddie murders, okay. Is it particularly brutal and gross and groan-worthy?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah. What are you going to be telling us about?
I am going to be telling you about a missing 411 case that was suggested to me by one of our listeners who said, have you done this case? And I said, no, I'm going to go find out about it and we'll do it soon. So, yeah. And to go along with that case, I brought the Forest cocktail because, as you know, many of the missing 411s go missing in the forest, and this one did too. And so I thought, perfectly named cocktail to go with it. So the ingredients for this cocktail are 3 raspberries, 5 blueberries, 2 blackberries, 1 sprig of rosemary, 2 lime wedges, ice, juice of a 1/4 lime. It lists out the ingredients on the original recipe for 2 cocktails, and I cut it in half. And then when I did that, it was still listed as 1/4 cup of simple syrup, which to me seems like a lot, and I like sweet drinks, so I'm a little scared.
1/4 cup?
1/4 cup, which when I started thinking about it,
holy
I realized
shit.
That's just 2 ounces. But when you say it in cups, it sounds like a huge volume. So it's 2 ounces of simple syrup and 2 ounces of vodka. Or if you want to go cups, it's 1/4 cup of simple and 1/4 cup of vodka. And then ginger ale. And the steps are to add your berries, rosemary, lime wedges, and lime juice to a glass and muddle well. Fill the glass with ice. Then add your simple syrup and vodka. Stir well. And then top with ginger ale. So I made mine a little different.
Very sweet.
It does. I think it's going to be grossly sweet, but we'll see. Because I really like sweet drinks, so it might be totally fine for me. You might not appreciate it as much.
Yeah.
And I did mine in a shaker and then strained it because that's a lot of berry pulp to be in the bottom of a glass, and I didn't want to be chewing it. So I didn't exactly make it as described, but okay. Are you ready? Let's see how sweet it is. It's sweet, but not as sweet as I had worried because the ginger ale and the lime really kind of cut it. So you could probably cut the simple down and it would be a little better.
Yeah, it's not really horrible, but
it's dark.
Good.
But I'm not getting a whole lot of berry flavor. And I'm barely getting I am getting a little rosemary.
Yeah, I don't really taste the berries that much either. It's kind of weird.
Okay. Well,
I don't know if I'd make this again.
It's good. I think I would add more berries just to make it fruitier. Okay, so this missing 411, his name is Tom Messick. And a lot of our, I think all of the missing 411s we've done in the past have been West Coast, and this is in New York, so a little bit different for us. This happened in 2015 when Tom Messick was an active 82-year-old man who had been married to his wife Beverly for 50 years. He had a few health concerns, but most elderly people do, so it's not super surprising. He had difficulty with hearing, and he only had the sight of out of one eye because he had lost an eye when he was in the military many years before. So this was not a new thing. He had accommodated to having just one eye. He was also having back problems, and he had a history of heart conditions. Although these issues might cause some people to reduce their activities, Tom was a little different. On November 15th, 2015, he went with family and friends on a day hunting trip near Horicon, New York, in the Grand George Wild Forest. Sorry, in the Lake George Wild Forest. I don't know if it's grand or not, but that's not in the name. I just made it up. The hunting party of seven people split into two groups. One group would stay stationary several hundred yards separating each other. They would watch for the deer while the other group, which was made of the younger members of the hunting party, would flush the deer towards them. So basically the older gentleman, including Tom, would sit on like a stump and wait for the deer to come at them, because the other hunting party members were behind pushing the deer. I guess I've never heard of this. I'm not a hunter, though. I've never heard of this being a technique. Seems a little on the...
It's kind of like to scare them into the other hunter's path.
Yeah. Which I understand, but then you're behind the deer. So kind of in the crossfire, I would think. Might not be the best. I don't know. Apparently, that's what they were doing. Personally, I don't know that I would be comfortable doing that, but whatever. Due to his age and health issues, Tom was tasked with sitting on a stump and waiting for the deer to be pushed towards him. The two groups planned to meet at a specific location a few hours later. Tom had been hunting before, and he was very experienced in the woods. In his younger years, he had even taught hunter and survival training for several years. So he knows his way around the woods, basically. He's not, you know, this is not a new place for him. He shouldn't be surprised by anything, and he knows how to survive out there. So he's got some skills. He was also a military veteran of the U.S. Army, having been a paratrooper during his military career. He knew his role on this day, and he knew the plan for meeting up. He had a rifle and walkie-talkie with him. So he had some gear. He was outfitted in like camo clothing and had some stuff. As everyone separated and started their separate tasks, Tom was seen at his perch on the stump. Although I did hear in another podcast that was talking about this case that one of the other hunters said he didn't want to sit down, so he was just kind of pacing in the area because he was uncomfortable sitting for long periods of time, so he just wanted to be up and alert and moving around, but he didn't plan on like leaving the area. So I don't know. I've heard differing things that he was sitting there and then somebody else said he wasn't. So I don't know. Either way, he was supposed to be in one location. Yeah. The hunting party met at their designated location hours after arriving in the woods, but Tom wasn't there. They started looking for him, but couldn't find him or any of his belongings. After realizing that Tom was missing, one of the hunting party members commented that he heard something strange in the woods during the hunting session, but there was no way to determine what the sound was or what might have made it. And this is something that has been like addressed a few times in the subsequent investigation and looking for him. Apparently he described it to his son. He just said it sounded like a sound. It was unusual. And then apparently his son later said that he told him it was a snapping sound, possibly like a trap, a large trap that had closed. And it may have been on the top of a nearby hill, but nowhere near where Tom had been sitting. But sounds in the forest don't always sound like they're coming from where they're coming from. So, and no one else commented on it. No one else said that they heard a sound. It was just one person that said he heard something weird. Nothing had been heard from Tom over the walkie-talkies. So he has his walkie-talkie, but he hasn't called out to anybody, hasn't said he's in danger, hasn't said he needs help, that he's lost, anything. The group searched for a couple of hours, but finding no evidence of Tom, they contacted forest rangers and reported him missing. Several rangers searched into the late night hours, but still no Tom. Couldn't find him anywhere. The group of hunters stayed with the vehicle through the night and regularly called Tom's name and honked their horn from the truck. So they're making noise with the thought that if he's out there, he'll either respond on the walkie-talkie or, you know, potentially find them. But he didn't. Searches for Tom were conducted by local firefighters, police, and State Department of Environmental Conservation, the FBI quick response team, as well as volunteers from the community. The larger group of searchers began the next day and continued for several weeks. They utilized helicopters, search dogs, and divers because they were near water, so they wanted to make sure he didn't fall into the lake or a pond or something and disappear that way. The search was very precise. They used a grid pattern of string, and the searchers would line up in formation and walk through the grid, making sure that every area was covered very thoroughly. It was one of the most involved searches in the area in many years. Over 300 searchers covered around 30 square miles of wilderness. The area being searched is described as fairly dense with vegetation and also contains some caves and abandoned mines. Because of his age and health issues, it was believed that Tom couldn't have gotten very far on his own. His wife also believes, due to his extensive experience in the woods, that he would have left pieces of clothing as markers in case he had left the area. So because of his background, his wife had said, no, if he was lost, you'd be finding parts of his clothing wrapped around trees, tied on bushes, so that there was some trail of where he was going. And that was never found. In fact, no signs of Tom have ever been found. His belongings have not been found.
It's vanished. The rifle,
gone, walkie-talkie, gone. No clothing that he was wearing has ever been found. The FBI being involved in the initial search was a red flag for some people, because the FBI usually doesn't get involved in cases like Tom's. The FBI typically works on cases that are believed to be kidnappings or occur on federal land, and this case was likely neither of those things. So, of course, people are saying, well, the FBI was involved, there's a cover-up. Tom's wife commented that the FBI told her something wasn't right with the case, but didn't elaborate on what that could have been. They just said, something's not right here, and wouldn't say why they thought that or what was off about it or anything like that. Detectives from the State Bureau of Criminal Investigations have become involved to research any leads that might come up. However, it's unclear if there have been any specific details for them to look at. They just said it's open and we're looking into stuff. In 2018, cadaver dogs were used in the area Tom was last seen in and the surrounding area, but nothing turned up with that search. Forest rangers continue looking for any signs of Tom, but in the nearly 9 years since his disappearance, nothing has been discovered. The rifle and walkie-talkie he was carrying that day have never been located. The case will remain open until evidence is found, but Tom's family believes he is deceased.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. And I mean, in this case, doing the research, I found a few sources where they were like, oh, the FBI knows exactly what's happened. They know some details, because why else would they have been involved in the initial search? But my opinion,
get involved in stuff like that, like murder, missing people, the FBI does get involved in that.
Right. So if they're out searching for him, that looks good for them, that they're, you know, they were FBI quick response team. They're sitting around, maybe they're not doing anything, and they find out there's somebody missing in the woods. Why wouldn't they go and say, hey, we're here to help? You know, I didn't delve too deep in it because the world is full of conspiracies and people who want to see stuff that may or may not be there. And I'm not saying that there's not something there. I'm just saying it's kind of a stretch to say just because the FBI was involved in the search that they know something shady's going on. Like, they're maybe there was a serial killer.
That's pretty dumb.
Yeah. But Other than the one weird sound, nobody reported hearing any ATVs, any vehicles, anything that could have carried him off, you know, that maybe he, some people suggested he was hit by a car and they put him in the car and then hit him because they realized they killed him or something, but nobody heard anything. There was nothing. He just disappeared, like many of these missing 411 cases. So
it's vanished. Yeah, that's super weird.
Yep. Poof, gone. I don't want to go poof.
No, me either. I'd like at least a trail or something.
Right. Yeah. We'll leave trails, everyone. If there's no trail, there's something really, really sketchy happening.
Alrighty, let's talk about these Keddie murders.
Keddie murders, okay.
Yes. It was a normal spring day for the Sharp family, which consisted of 36-year-old Glenna, 15-year-old John, 14-year-old Sheila, 12-year-old Tina, 10-year-old Rick, and 5-year-old Greg. So a big family, just a normal day for them.
Yeah.
Glenna and her son Greg were heading to a nearby town of Quincy to pick up Rick from baseball practice after a nice visit with some family friends. On their way back from the baseball field, they happened upon John and a friend trying to hitchhike back home from Quincy. Glenna rolled down the window and told the boys to hop in so she could give them a ride back home. The two older kids had planned that night. John and his friend Dana planned on hitchhiking back to Quincy to meet up with some friends, and Sheila had plans to stay at the next-door neighbor's house for a sleepover. Her sister Tina was already at the neighbor's house watching TV, but left around 9:30 to let her sister have a good sleepover. Everything was going great. Sheila and her friends stayed up late in the night gossiping about boys and talking about their school year. When the sun rose, Sheila knew it was time for her to head home. She grabbed her belongings and walked the short distance to her house. She knocked, expecting someone to be awake inside, but after no answer, she fished out her keys and let herself in. But as soon as she made it inside, she froze. In the living room of the cabin sat Glenna, John, and John's friend, Dana Wingate. The three had been bound in electrical wires and medical tape.
Ooh.
Her other siblings were not found until she searched further into the home. She found Rick and Greg, as well as their friend Justin Smart, hiding in a closet in the boys' room. After finding this horrific scene, she ran back over to the neighbor's house and told them what happened. The neighbor, Jamie Siebold...
Question. You said they're bound. Are they alive?
We'll get there.
Oh, shit.
The neighbor, Jamie Siebold, ran over and helped the boys out through a window so they wouldn't have to see their deceased family members.
Oh, so some were. Okay.
Police were called and an investigation was launched. Inside the home, detectives found a bloodied hammer and two bloody knives. Based on the evidence, it was determined that the murders had taken place in the living room of the house. Glenna was lying on her side with tape holding her underwear in her mouth as a gag.
Oh.
She had stab wounds in the neck and chest, as well as an imprint on the side of her head matching the butt of a BB gun.
Oh. I don't like it.
John had a slash through his throat, as well as severe blunt force trauma to his head. Dana also had severe head trauma and appeared to be strangled to death. When asked by detectives, none of the next-door neighbors heard any commotion during the night. However, a house further down the street said they were awakened by the sound of muffled screams around 1:30 a.m.
Mm.
The stepfather of Justin Smart, Martin Smart, told police that a hammer from his tool shed had gone missing the night before. The neighbor that Sheila was with this night saw a green van that they didn't recognize sitting outside the house around 9 or 10 at night. Due to the help of hypnosis, Justin was able to give police a description of the murders and said he remembered seeing two men in the house that night. Based on the description, Harlan Embry created a sketch of the man. However, he had no experience in forensic sketching or much artistic skills, so the sketch didn't provide many answers.
Okay, wait a second.
Yeah, okay. They just pick some random dude from the police force who's like, you good with a pencil, Mike?
What? Okay. The point of a sketch is to make it look like the person you're looking for. So why would you have somebody sketch it that was not an artist? That would be...
Yeah, what? Pretty dumb. Especially like the forensics artists have to be able to create a face based off of just like words, like a description.
Yeah.
Like some people probably like it's there's not usually cases where people aren't having a horrible time when they need a forensic sketch artist. So it's also having to like decode kind of what they're thinking about or what they saw.
Right. And put aside their trauma. And but still, like, I'm not saying they have to be a forensic artist, but at least somebody who can draw something better than a stick figure would be a good idea.
Yeah.
They were like, no, he was a little fatter than that. So they just draw a round body instead of a straight up and down stick. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So shortly after the murders, Martin Smart, one of the main suspects, moved to Reno to escape a struggling marriage. While in Reno, he sent a letter to his ex-wife talking about how their marriage had strained him. And in the letter, he said, I've paid the price of your love, and now I've bought it with four people's lives.
Don't say shit like that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Investigators also interviewed Martin's shrink, who claimed that Martin said he was involved with the murders, but only responsible for murdering Glenna and Tina. Oh. But one question ate at the police. Where was Tina? Because Tina was missing. She wasn't in the home anywhere. Oh. And, like, the younger boys were found in their room.
Okay.
The mother and... the oldest son and his friend were the ones who were murdered in the house. So Tina was missing.
Missing. Okay.
Yes. Tina was not found near or around the house, which led police to believe this was a kidnapping situation.
Makes sense.
Almost exactly 3 years after the murders, a bottle collector was looking for antique bottles when he discovered part of a human jawbone and skull.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
A few months later, it was confirmed that this was Tina Sharp. The remains were discovered almost 60 miles away.
Wow.
While no one has ever been charged with the Keddie murders, police claim to have DNA material matching the DNA of a living suspect. They just haven't. That was news in 2018. No arrests have been made since then. No, they didn't really say who the suspect was, so...
They just have DNA,
much will
but
ever come out about it.
Nobody to attach it to. I wonder if they'll use the familial DNA on this one because so many cases have been found or been solved, you know, by using familial DNA. And it's just a lot of it is just waiting for the funds to do it.
I think it's Martin Smart, if I had to guess, since he confessed to his therapist that he did it.
That is wild. Well, you said he wrote his ex-wife and said he took four lives. I mean,
yeah. Well, I bought four lives with this. Yeah.
Oh, don't say shit like that. That's gross. Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that investigators think he did it as well, and so maybe they're. Have already ruled him
out
from the DNA. I mean, it's not hard to get DNA. just takes
true him. He was the one saying that a hammer was missing from his house, so he's got a lot of things pointing at him.
Okay, devil's advocate, you could say that he was just talking about the four lives, that he could say that it's affected him and been a cost on his life that those four people died. Yeah. But
that seems like a stretch.
It's a stretch. But, you know, yeah. I mean, if you're his attorney, you might try and spin that. Yeah. Some people would believe it, I'm sure. If you spun it good enough, maybe. I don't like it.
Find it hard to believe. You have a chaser, though?
I do have a chaser, and my chaser is an Instagram account called Tourons of National Parks. And Tourons are tourists who are morons.
Oh, I get it.
And so the whole account is people, it's videos of people doing stupid shit around wild animals in national parks.
Trying to go take pictures next to buffaloes and shit.
Yes. Yes. There's one that I just saw the other day where it's a whole bunch of buffalo just standing across, and there's a baby buffalo, and they're standing across a road, and there's people on motorcycles, and they pull off, and there's one woman just walking out trying to get as close as she possibly can. Not very many of them show anyone getting injured, but that's surprising to me because you know there are people getting injured from being
definitely
stupid and getting too close. Stay away from wild animals, people. I don't care how cute you think they are. They are wild animals for a reason. They are not domesticated. That buffalo is going to fuck you up.
It's going to fucking run your ass over.
Yes. I saw one the other day where people were driving past a buffalo and it was just fucking up their car. Like, it rammed its head into the rear quarter panel, ripped the bumper off, and they're trying to drive past it. And
I'd be very upset.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we went to Yellowstone, there were some really stupid people doing stupid stuff. And we just sat in the car like, we're going to get to see something really gory here, and we're gonna not feel bad about the people that it happened to. Sorry, I'm not a nice person if I think that people that approach wild animals should have consequences, but you know, I'm not saying they should die, but I'm saying don't be dumb. Leave the wild animals alone. What's your chaser today?
My chaser is an audio drama podcast. So I've just recently discovered about audio dramas. It's like a movie without the video. So they have like all the noise of movies and like a script and act like voice actors and stuff.
Yeah.
And this one's called Tower 4. It's I listened to it on Spotify, but it's probably where other like podcasts are found, but it's super interesting. I like it because it's sometimes you get bored of just people talking, and this adds like the atmosphere to it.
Right.
So it's it's pretty cool. I like them a lot.
Dad and I listened to one a few years ago that is a similar style, and it was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was about people who were like stuck in a radio transmission tower, and they were just, you know, trying to tell their story and get help. And that was a good similar idea. It was just a story, and
yeah Yeah, and another one I really like was Boraska. It's got, do you remember the show Sweet Life on Deck?
I know the name.
Show I used to watch. Yeah. It's got one of the twins from that as the main actor. So it's cool to like hear actual actors. Like, it's not just people who wrote a script themselves, and they're people who have like acting training and stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's got a huge twist at the end. It's pretty interesting.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. It's worth the listen.
Cool. Well, thanks for the recommendation.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you so much. Go find
us
on Patreon.
To check out our Patreon, and our Instagram, all that good stuff should be linked below. Come check us out.
Absolutely. There's links to everything in our show notes. So if you can't find us somewhere, go to the show notes of the episode that you're listening to, and under a section about wanting to contact us, there's a link to everything that you can find to reach us directly. And we love talking to people and hearing stories and getting ideas. So if you have something that you really want us to cover, or a drink that you'd like to torture us with, definitely let us know.
We're
game for it all.
Yeah, love you, Mom.
Love you too.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.